24 hours of the next business day to arrange for pickup. Thank you for supporting 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
No intro music. Because, you know, what's a show with everything goes right? Anything goes right, for crying out loud. Do 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 I can't even imagine that. That's like the one thing the radio station should have that actually works is the thing that puts music onto the air.
Or my mic.
Your mic is...
Is it on?
I don't know. I don't know if your mic is on or not. Hey, Groove House.
Yes.
Is Barrett turned on?
Nope. He is now.
All right.
Now we're on. Now I am.
Boy, there that's even louder.
Whoa.
So we have a bunch of dead air.
Do we not have our theme song on vinyl?
Yeah, we, I think Saeed might have broken it. What you do, Saeed? You got to come in here and make things work. So Saeed was running the board.
What's not working?
The CD player.
Oh, number one, there's always a problem with one.
Always a problem. Everybody knows that.
It's in two. So play two.
I just put it in two.
Go for it.
So we're going to try it again?
Sure. We'll just pretend that other part didn't happen.
All right.
You're on air.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
We'll be right back.
Greetings and welcome to this perfectly started version of Technology Bites today. Where we just started the show a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
Everything was, it went off without just a hitch.
Without
it was
a hit.
Been really impressive.
Yeah. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groove House.
Well, we are just house. we're not doing very well tonight.
Was it Wednesday?
Maybe we're coming up on 19 years, so maybe when we get to 20, we'll figure it out.
I'm going to start taking notes.
You need to have a little checklist. There's Peter Hughes.
Hello. I'm Peter Hughes.
Yes, you are. All right, so false start, fits and starts. I guess, you know, that's part of our charm or something. I don't know. Anyway, so last Friday we had a geek gathering, and the stars aligned, and it was just fantastic. I mean, there was a missing spot for Groove House, but we had great weather. They had a Photo Fest show there, which I think only a small number of people showed up during our slot. So we just dominated the whole place.
Although they looked like they belong. The guy, I think, whose exhibit it was, Loki, looked kind of steampunk. I thought they were with us, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, they fit in perfectly. So, good night. Yeah. The weather was awesome.
The weather was great. We had a good turnout. It was a friend of mine, Christina, came in with her daughter from Minnesota.
She was a hit. Everybody loved her. Yeah.
Kitty. Kitty was her name. Is her name. She's not dead. So, yeah, Kitty is like 12 years old, full of interest. And as she said, her mother said that Kitty told her that the Geek Gathering may have been one of the best moments of her life.
Sweet.
So far. Good kid.
Aren't 12-year-olds awesome?
Yeah.
Like, give her time. Give her another year.
And everybody was really well-behaved. I mean, they were very nice to let her, you know, handle the toys and play with the technology. And everybody treated her really nice. And it seemed, you know, her mother seemed very calm about the whole thing. So it was very safe, very cool environment. It was just fun to see. It was a lot of fun to see. And if you missed out, well, you missed out. All right. So visit us online at geekradio.com. We are heart bleed free, so you don't have to worry about that. We won't be exposing your information to anyone via our SSL. And you can go to geekradio.com, learn all kinds of things about the show. And if you would like to, you can also use the contact form on the page to send us a question or ask us, you know, if you don't want to be on the air later on, you can always contact us via the website. You can also hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel Tech Bites. You can also use our website. We have a IRC client built into the website that will let you participate in the IRC. If you want to come in, just go to geekradio.com, follow the links. You can call us during the show, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT is the number to call. It's been a little slow the last couple of weeks or maybe months with phone calls, so if you've got a question or you want to discuss any of the latest tech topics, feel free to call in and participate during the phone-in part of the show. We'd love to have you. We're going to try to resurrect Peter Hughes. We've lost the connection, the internet here being...
Well, he's
back. All right.
I wonder how well this is going
to
go.
I was still on wireless, I switched from wireless to wired, so hopefully that will help.
Okay, so we have Ethernet now, so if it doesn't work over that, then we're just, you know... Based on the way the show started, I think that I don't have much hope. So it'll be fine. We're going to press on and do our best. It's why you tune in, because we try real hard. 713-526-5738 if you want to get in the queue to be on the air. Right now, we're going to go to San Antonio and our rock-solid Ethernet connection to the Skype.
Do our best.
We try real hard. Here's Peter Hughes, the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, I'll be info shocked if we don't if we make it all the way through this info shot without any issues. Speaking of issues, there is a big one, and this should be covered more in the non-techie world, but I don't think it really is. If you don't know what Heartbleed is or you haven't heard of it, then the media is falling down on its job. Essentially, there is a catastrophic bug in OpenSSL. Some of this I'm getting from the Schneier on Security blog. The Heartbleed bug allows anyone on the internet to read the memory of the systems protected by the vulnerable versions of the OpenSSL software. This compromises the secret keys used to identify the service providers and to encrypt the traffic, the names and passwords of the users, and the actual content. This allows attackers to eavesdrop communications, steal data directly from the services and users, and to impersonate services and users. Translating that into English, the problem, OpenSSL is the software that runs on the servers that, you know how you told, you know, you may have told your grandmother how, you know, when they're going to put their credit card in to look and make sure the little lock is there, you know, that the HTTPS is working right. Yeah, OpenSSL is what drives HTTPS. And so it means that stuff that, you know, and when you go, you know how you log into Facebook using HTTPS, it's because you're in a coffee shop and you don't want people to sniff your traffic. Well, that's the problem. You know, that's where OpenSSL is. That's where it sits in the ecosystem, and it's got a problem. Basically, an attacker can grab 64K of memory from a server. The attack leaves no trace and can be done multiple times to grab a different random 64K of memory, which means that anything in memory, SSL private keys, user keys, anything, is vulnerable. And you have to assume that it is all compromised, all of it. According to Schneier on Security, on the scale of 1 to 10, this is an 11. There's 500,000 sites that are vulnerable. And if you run a server, you can look it up. I'd say go to Schneier.com and read the article on Heartbleed, and he has a link to the vulnerability checker. I, knock on wood, I checked my sites, and for whatever reason, either I've got the patch or I don't, or else I have an older version that doesn't have the bug. So my stuff's been fine, and so you don't have to worry about the geekradio.com going down or something or any of that. But the thing about it is there's enough systems that have been that were vulnerable, including a lot of big names. The probability is close to 1 to 1 that every target has had its private keys extracted by multiple intelligence agencies. The real question is whether or not someone deliberately inserted this bug into OpenSSL and has had 2 years that this bug has been sitting there, apparently, of unfettered access to everything. So far, people are guessing an accident, but you never know. So then there's another article I found that has the most pressing questions on Heartbleed. Let's see. What is it? It's a bug in OpenSSL encryption, a software library that Google, Facebook, Yahoo, Amazon, and a very big chunk of the world's biggest websites use to secure the transmission of private information. So that's what it is. You know, 500,000 websites have been made vulnerable to attack. Although the actual extent of the damage is unclear, security experts say this is exactly the kind of easy vulnerability that hackers have a field day with. Quote, it affects 2/3 of the internet's infrastructure, according to Wayne Jackson, security expert and CEO of Sonatype, told Fast Company. He said, I don't think this is all that different from bugs that we see that get reported. It's just this one is foundational. How's the private data gathered? Heartbleed allows hackers to reach into the exchange of private computer memory handled by OpenSSL and lets them pull information en masse. So they tested some stuff and they show an example where they pulled a sample from Yahoo's mail servers and redacted the stuff that you could, you know, that you wouldn't want to have shared. But it does show usernames and plain text passwords when you get into it. You know, the Google, Amazon, and Yahoo are probably not in danger now, they were made aware of the bug on Tuesday afternoon, and they claimed to have remedied the problem, and I would take a guess they better have. Security blogger Graham Cluley points out that smaller sites like OkCupid, Imgur, Flickr, and Eventbrite were potentially in greater danger. Dropbox and Netflix say they have installed the necessary patches. Several companies have said they've not seen the exploit affect customers directly so far. And then, like I said, there's a tool that's designed by a guy named Filippo Valsorda that lets you see if your server – so if you have a website, go run it through there. You just put in the domain name and hit submit, and it'll tell you. What can you do? This is the tough part. No one's really 100% sure. Some security experts think it's best to change your password right away. Others, like security firm Veracode, recommend sitting back and waiting for confirmation from the companies that they've fixed it and then change your password. Because, of course, if you change it and then they exploit it, then you're kind of – you're not any more safe. Excuse me. This is a good – example of why you want to use a different password and maybe even a different login tailored for each site that you log into, because then you don't have to change as many things to fix a breach at a particular site. So heart bleed, and it'll make your heart bleed if you're running a server and you're under and you've got a problem like that. In other, I guess, not so great news or interesting news, they had one of the hearings today for about the Comcast merger. And yesterday they had a 180-page explanation of how great an idea the merger was or is, and then today the witnesses didn't have much new to say. But the senators in the committee did have some questions, including Al Franken, Amy Klobuchar, and Mike Lee, asked questions about rising cable rates, channel bundles, and network neutrality, mostly getting the same answers we've heard before. Franken's questioning stood out, pointing out comments that Comcast made when it bought NBC Universal, citing Time Warner Cable as a competitor that would help keep it in check. Although now basically Comcast says they don't compete for customers, so it doesn't, you know, it has no negative effect on competition. Let's see. The prospect of the two companies joining to create one vertically integrated giant controlling both content and access to that content for millions of people loomed over the proceedings. Comcast took the opportunity to announce higher speed on two of its internet tiers in the Northeast and to call out its growing network of Wi-Fi hotspots for customers, while once again promising new features and better tech for Time Warner Cable areas. Still, with so many networks and access for 30 million customers potentially under one brand, Comcast's TWC's arguments about competition from Google Fiber and Netflix, which in 2001 Comcast said it didn't fear competition from those, telcos and satellites, as far as, you know, Google Fiber, Netflix, telcos and satellites, that's their real competition, doesn't really kind of ring true. So, I don't know. I think that this one certainly needs to be looked at very closely, because you're talking about, you're talking about covering a lot of people with one company that apparently has no competition. So it's certainly worth keeping an eye on. There frankly should be a whole lot more competition, and we've talked about that copiously in the past here. Here's a Facebook change. You know, it's like the worst Matrix, you know, the feeling of deja vu when they changed something. You know, you see a black cat go by a second time. Yeah, every time Facebook does a major change, then what? That ends up being it ends up sucking is the usual, I think, would be the normal judgment that most people have on it. Facebook has decided to strip the messaging parts from its iOS and Android apps and make users install Facebook Messenger separately if they want to keep chatting with friends. Facebook spokesperson confirmed to TechHive, today we're starting to notify people that messages are moving out of the Facebook app and over to the Messenger app. To continue sending messages on mobile, people will need to install the Messenger app. You know, so this will go over like many other Facebook changes. Apps have been a recurring theme in Mark Zuckerberg's remarks so far this year, beginning in January when he said standalone experiences were going to be Facebook's focus going forward. And they bought a messaging service that competed with them called WhatsApp for $19 billion. But the WhatsApp acquisition didn't kill Messenger. Zuck said after buying the app that Messenger and WhatsApp served different use cases and that Messenger evolved from Facebook chat, which was more instant messaging, not SMS. I don't know. I guess I don't know. At this point, does anybody really see that big a difference between SMS and instant messaging? I mean, it ends up being threaded conversation on most devices that I've seen, Android or iPhone. But so now that Facebook is killing its instant messaging service, its pair of complementary SMS replacement apps are prepared to dominate the messaging market. But first, they have to get all those people who casually used to chat to migrate over, which might not go that smoothly, or as smoothly as Facebook would hope. Now a few Apple rumory things. Why not? They're fun. The iWatch rumors are back. Yeah, remember where, they're not going to do it. If they can't do it right, they won't do it. The latest rumors are that the device may hit the shelves as early as this summer, sometime after the Worldwide Developer Conference, which is always in like late June. The report comes from the Economic Daily News out of China and claims that Taiwan's Quanta Computer will be the exclusive manufacturer of the iWatch, initially producing 65 million of the devices. Apple's thought to be producing a chip specifically for the iWatch based on the same architecture as the A7 chip, which is what powers the iPhone 5S, and will be produced by Samsung, which, funny. As Cult of Mac points out, regardless of the heated battles between the two companies, they're suing each other all over the place. Samsung is still the only place to go for high-output production of ARM-based chips. Same old. Then the rest of the stuff is rumors we've all heard before about sapphire glass displays and biometrics and Apple's HealthBook app and stuff like that. Then the other Apple rumor, this one varies a little bit. You know, I mean, they all circle around sort of specific things. According to a Japanese website, EMS1, citing Taiwan's Industrial and Commercial Times, Apple's planning to begin mass production of the 4.7-inch iPhone 6 in July, with the larger 5.5-inch version to enter mass production in September. The report notes that both versions of the next-generation iPhone will go on sale at some point during the fourth quarter of the year, with the 4.7-inch iPhone being announced and released earlier than the 5.5-inch iPhone. The news comes as a report from Reuters last month stated that Apple would begin production of the 4.7-inch display used in the iPhone 6 this May for the devices released this fall. So that matches. That same report also noted the 5.5-inch version of the iPhone 6 would be delayed due to difficulties with the production technology and would start several months after. So it could be interesting. You know, it could be as early as September with the 4.7-inch display. Obviously, supply of the larger display, if they start later, is going to be more constrained. So in addition to a larger display, the next-generation iPhone, the rumors all say it's expected to feature a durable sapphire screen and a thinner bezel-free design in addition to processor and camera upgrades, which, frankly, you could write some of these rumors in your sleep. You don't even have to be an iPhone aficionado or interested person, and you could probably come up with most of these if you've even kind of fiddled with an iPhone. Now new stuff. Two new things. If standard gigabit Ethernet is just too slow for you, Intel is going to give you another option. This week at the National Association of Broadcasters show in Las Vegas, the company announced a new feature called Thunderbolt Networking that will soon be available to all PCs with Thunderbolt 2 controllers. The feature, which will be enabled by an upcoming Windows driver update and is already on the Mac, will, quote, emulate an Ethernet connection environment and provide 10 gigabit per second two-way links between two computers connected with a Thunderbolt cable. Since you'll need to connect the two computers directly to each other, the solution obviously won't scale like an actual 10 gigabit per second networking equipment. But for now, that hardware to do something like that is very expensive and hard to get, way outside the price range for individual people and smaller businesses. Thunderbolt networking is apparently not being enabled for older computers with first-generation Thunderbolt controllers. I'm guessing it's too much bandwidth for them. While the feature will be new to the Windows operating system, the ability to network two Thunderbolt Macs was introduced in Mavericks, in the latest OS from Apple. It doesn't appear to require Thunderbolt 2 on that platform, though people have experienced issues with it. Configuring a Thunderbolt bridge can make for fast but occasionally choppy transfer speeds. So 10 gigabits per second, if you've only got a couple computers to hook to each other, there are circumstances where that might be useful. And finally, on new stuff, this is faster than 10 gigabits per second, even though it's not about data transfer. There's a new fast charging battery for everyone's favorite gadget, the smartphone, they demo fully charging a phone in 30 seconds flat. It was inspired by natural processes, and the makers claim that the technology can make our smartphones more eco-friendly and could ultimately lead to a super fast charging car. It's an Israeli nanotechnology company called StoreDot. They unveiled their new battery tech at Microsoft's Think Next Symposium in Tel Aviv. The battery utilizes nanodots that originate naturally and self-assemble. Gizmag reports that these dots are, quote, chemically synthesized bioorganic peptide molecules that, thanks to their small size, improve electrode capacitance and electrolyte performance. It's got electrolytes for you Idiocracy fans. The end result is batteries that can be fully charged in seconds rather than hours. Previous nanodot technologies were metal-based, which makes them toxic, but the nanodots from StoreDot can be made from bioorganic raw materials that are environmentally friendly and abundant. And their ability to self-assemble means manufacturing will be cheaper and simpler. Right now they're seeking a patent, so obviously you're not going to be able to rush out to the store to get it. And the current tech has the approximate capacity of a smartphone battery at 2,000 milliamp hours. In the future, the battery's electrode could be modified to sustain higher currents and be used, if you put them together and connected them, to power electric cars. This one, the bad news side of it is you'll have to wait till probably 2016 before you're going to see that in your phone. So I guess we'll start the rumors now for the, what is it, iPhone 2016. Well, so 2014 is iPhone 6, so it'll be the iPhone 8 could have this technology in it. And I'm Peter Hughes with the Technology Byte in Bytes Info Shot News.
The Technology Byte Info Shot. All right.
That actually worked.
It did. It sounded good. We were able to carry on an in-studio conversation with ourselves without much worry. We did kind of kept an ear open, and we didn't hear you cut out. So that's
hoping there didn't start stuttering.
Yeah, so it all worked out. So now we move on to the other part of our show. Do we have a Barrett time coming up tonight?
Kinda. I just did it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's working on it. All right. So in the meantime, for the next 30 minutes or so, a little less than 30 minutes, we're going to take your calls at 713-526-5738.
I have as much of a Barrett time as we did a Spotless opening. It's about that much Barrett time.
Okay. Well, it's better than nothing, I suppose. Well, maybe not. So, 713. Oh, you need to turn your mic on if you want to talk.
We had a pretty impressive Spotless ending. So you should have a pretty impressive Barrett time.
Spotless ending?
I meant to say opening, if I didn't say opening.
I'm not sure what you said.
He wasn't completely paying attention. He just felt like there was some snark needed in that gap. So the snark gap has been filled.
I'm just having, I'm having bear time withdrawals. It seems like, The amount of Barrett time has been getting less and less over the last couple of months.
Yeah, we had it was all on track, and then we had UPS's start to fail, which it looked like it was a circuit in the wall, and then we started rerouting power, and then we realized, no, it's the bank of UPS's. So that was fun.
That's fun.
That was at 6 o'clock today.
You know, you're in charge of the IT infrastructure at your job.
Someone should replace those. I know.
I'm wondering if it's the equipment that needs to be replaced.
Is there like some kind of mean time between failure rates that someone's looking and they're getting in there on the maintenance schedule?
Seems like
I don't know. Someone should look at that.
In fire drill mode over
there. Well, I mean, we have, for as much infrastructure as we have, you know, stuff's going to happen every once in a while.
It seems to be happening all the time.
Not all the time.
Is it true that you power all of your UPSs with the batteries from all your broken cell phones?
That there is some truth to that, yeah.
That's not alkaline, that's his tears.
And that that heartbleed thing is giving me heartburn.
Yeah, I stayed up the other night, last night, dealing with all of that, because that's kind of ugly.
Well, see, the thing is, it's not really that big of a problem. It's just that they marketed it really well. They got a domain name, they got a cool little icon, mm-hmm. and the media caught on to it. So because of that, all these like non-technical people that are like managers and other people that work in areas that work with IT, they're all aware of it, you know. So like all these random people are like, what about that heartbleed thing, you know? Are y'all what's up with that? Are y'all can y'all get heart bled? And
yeah, this
and
is
so
on.
Then the management says, hey, what about this heartbleed thing? Are we vulnerable to this? And so then I have to go and check, you know, 700 things.
It's the same thing. It's on the heels, all of our client companies, on the heels of the Target breach, where before no one really cared about security. I mean, the real companies did, but a lot of people just didn't. And then so that put it on the radar. And then this is the first thing they can talk about, quote unquote, intelligently after the fact. So, that's what we did. We were just making our clients happy.
I'm going to have to ask you to stay over the weekend.
If you could patch our SSLs, that would be great.
And give me a TPS report on that.
If you don't come in tomorrow, don't bother coming in Monday.
Woo-hoo, 4-day weekend. yeah. Well, there's already a site up there where you can put in the website in question and test it for the vulnerability. So you should probably run that against all your sites.
You need to send that out to all those people who are asking you questions about it so then they can check it themselves.
Yeah, why don't y'all try it and tell me what you find?
The sad part is it's really trivial. It's like 8 lines of code is what did it. The whole thing is like there's a payload, there's a packet that goes in when they're passing information back, and you can only pass like 1 byte, but you can say, hey, I want 64 bytes back. So it returns whatever's next to it in that memory space, and sometimes it'll be a password or a key or something like that. But they're phishing. Like Flicked said, it is kind of hard to exploit. It is a big deal, but it's not as big of a deal as like the NSA poisoning, cryptography, and a lot of other things that are going on.
Well, my thing was just that, you know, most of our stuff that I've checked so far isn't vulnerable. It's not vulnerable because we're not running the 101 version of OpenSSL. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily a good thing either, because just because you're not vulnerable to this because, you know, you're not running a version of OpenSSL that was released 2 years ago means that, you know, you're running, well, in some cases older versions, but in some cases newer versions, but not of the 1.0.101 release, right? But, you know, if you're running 098 something.
Running 096B, all of our stuff's too old.
We're not vulnerable to heartbleed. Now, we may be vulnerable to 17 other things, but the only part of that I'm answering is that we're not vulnerable
roll
to heartbleed.
Roll back.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls at 713-526-KPFT. I see a call coming in. All the other lines are open. Barrett is juggling a Barrett time for the second hour of the show. We have nothing but good things happening tonight. So give us a ring, 713-526-KPFT, if you want to be on the air, if you want to discuss the heartbleed situation, or if you want to talk about something else that's on your mind about technology. We're here, and we're here to help. I see that Groovehouse has taken the call, placed him in the queue, Just ready to serve them up.
And we've got room for more.
We do. That's what I was saying.
So okay. Everyone, yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, you're
I
very...
miss these things when, I understand. When I'm working. Yeah, I don't mean to double
it's okay.
the information.
We totally talked about saying this at the Geek Gathering. So it's, you know, that's fine.
No, we'd like to encourage you to call in now and get the queue. It's a great opportunity to be on the air with Technology Bites and get your technology questions answered.
I think I need to find some first caller theme music. So that way, you know, the first call, people will be more inclined to call in because they're the only ones that get theme music when they call in.
Well, then, wouldn't that make everybody else not call in once they didn't get the theme music? You have to come up with theme music for the first 10 calls. At least there'd be like a, you know, a gold, silver, and bronze.
I could do that. And the, and the theme music could get worse for each version.
Just more problems.
Can we do songs based upon the kind of question that they have, like some of the late night talk shows do, based on the guests?
That's going to have to do that.
Why don't we get Groovehouse to compose a poem?
All I foresee are more problems with the CD player. So let's not go there. And we'll just take calls regularly.
We need a house band.
There you go. Now,
hey-o, yeah.
Now Pete's talking.
Yeah, so we got Groovehouse doing the hey-os, and we just need a band leader. You
we
know?
Need a Doc Severinsen.
We need to road trip and steal the Rockabilly Explosion.
Wait a minute.
Or whatever the animatronic band is called.
Let's just hire away the Roots from the Tonight Show.
Are they, yeah, they're closing up shop,
we'll
right?
Take
they will work for food. Come on.
Are they not with Jimmy Fallon anymore?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, okay.
I know we can probably get Paul from Letterman,
David Letterman
soon,
next
yeah.
year. Yeah,
I think Barrett's closer to Doc Severedhead than I am.
Doc Severedhead.
No, I think
Severson.
Doc Severinsen.
Severinsen. Yeah.
Severinsen.
All right, Groovehouse, give us that first call.
All right, first on the show, we are going to speak with Scott.
Scott, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, first time caller, east of the Rockies. What do you got?
Well, we got you.
Chemtrails all over the place.
Right. Well, this is probably one of these questions I know the answer to, but I haven't heard about it lately. But buzzing through my daughter's iPhone the other day, see an app on there, free music, and so I asked her about it, and she goes, "Oh yeah, I got it off of iTunes. Totally legit. Totally cool." Didn't think about it for a while, and, you know, all of a sudden I'm hearing all these new songs on her phone, and, you know, went and opened it up, and it looked like an app that's, you know, just automatically leading you to other websites. In particular, is there multiple websites, but one of them was mp3skull.com, and, you know, I don't know anything about that. I got a feeling I know about that, but just wanted an update from y'all on the legitimacy of that, and... What's going on with that, you know, getting something like that out of iTunes? And I think the kids are thinking that's maybe more legit that they're doing it that way.
I'm looking at the iTunes store right now, and there's an app called Free Music Download. Download thousands of songs completely free.
Nowhere does it say completely legal.
I wonder if it's some kind of is there a torrent app for the... I mean, there's ways to download music from, you know, people who are sharing music on the web. I wouldn't be surprised to learn that there's an app that'll do that.
Well, if it ties into MP3 Skull, that's got a lot of, like, top 40 stuff that is legitimately selling on iTunes and Amazon and all these places that is not being given away for free right now, like the Lord's Song and a lot of that stuff. The Lord's Song, rather.
Is it possible she's ringing up debt? Is it causing her to download songs and pay for them?
Well, no, it's not paying for anything. And again, what it looked like to me was that it was just an app that looked really cool and, you know, legit on the cover, but it just was leading you straight into a separate website called mp3skull.com.
mp3skulled?
Skull. Like skull candy, but not the candy.
Yeah.
Not the headphones.
S-K-U-L-L, skull. And it looked like it sounded like we were talking about, you know, one of these sharing sites.
Unless there are a lot of ads. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, she has a way to get these permanently on her phone. You know, it's not like it's streaming. It's permanently on her phone.
Yeah, MP3s.
And they're popular songs, too, so I'm going, that's sending all kind of red flags to me.
Yeah, MP3 Skull is a site that seems to link to locations that are hosting MP3 files. So they are questionable in terms of their legality. I just went there and, yeah, it's like the one, I go to MP3 Skull, top song listed there points me to a WordPress site that has the MP3 file on it. So
it's an aggregator.
It's an aggregator for MP3 downloads. So it's not strictly legal. And she could be putting you and your family at risk for copyright issues.
I would say even worse, unless there's like a lot of ads, unless this app is making money through ads, a lot of times these apps will lure you in by saying, hey, here's a whole bunch of free stuff, while the app will do something like leak data or, you know, like broadcast what the phone's doing to other nefarious sites. And Apple's pretty good about catching those, but not always. And I'm pretty sure that linking to music, especially when Apple's got the iTunes store, that's probably like, you know, in violation of their terms of service. This may be something that snuck in there and probably isn't all that great to have on your phone. It's not something I have on my phone.
I'll give you an example. I just did a search on MP3 Skull for I play in a band called the Flying Fish Sailors, and I did a search for my band, and I found a download of one of our songs, which I happen to have hosted on my web server. So, so MP3 Skull basically trolls the internet looking for MP3 files and makes it searchable at their site. So this app is allowing your daughter to download music, some of which may be okay. Like I have mine out there. I don't care if somebody downloads it, but somebody else could put a whole bunch of copyrighted material on a file server and your daughter's downloading that, which is putting you, you know, in arrears with the law.
It's easy enough to put a stop to that. You know, I go back to the Napster days when I was younger and was doing that kind of stuff before it was, big deal. I thought they put a stop to that, and they were, you know, really policing that a lot more to where it wasn't so easy to get.
As soon as they shut one down, they open up something else. I mean, the one thing, if you want to stay out of legal trouble and if you want to stay out of trouble in general, there are a lot of streaming services, and I use Google Music, and it's like $8 or $9 a month, and I can listen and stream to whatever I want to in the whole catalog. I'm sure iTunes Radio, have you tried that, Jay?
I played with iTunes Radio a little bit. It's free. You can listen to music. You don't get to pick the songs you want to hear.
Okay. Well, there's stuff like Pandora.
Pandora also is one that doesn't let you pick the songs, but Spotify, if you pay for it, you can pick the songs.
Right.
And you Slack.
Slack?
Slacker.
I know there's stuff out there where you can pay and you can choose kind of what you listen to. It's like getting the whole music catalog for X, you know,
there's
a few bucks a month.
There's one like an owl in the name or something. I've never used it, though.
Well, the thing here's the situation is that phone has a distinct internet address. If it's using the Wi-Fi at your home, it's your home internet. But also if it's using cellular broadband, that can be tracked back to that phone or be tracked back to your house. So for whatever reason, if she downloads a song from a site that's being monitored or is a honey trap for piracy or copyright stuff, then there can be repercussions on that.
Yeah. All right. So, that's what I thought.
Here's the way that you think about it. If you can get the file itself, if you can get the music file and it's a top 40 hit, chances are it's not free.
Definitely.
I would say that the site that's offering you access to that music is not legitimate. And they're like Barrett said, it's an aggregator. It's basically, this site doesn't host any of the illegal music. It just finds it wherever it happens to exist. The only way you get music for a reasonable price, we can get it for free like through Pandora, but you can't actually own the song. You can listen to it like a radio but you can, through iTunes, you can buy music, and through other sites, you can buy the songs. So if she's got a phone full of top hits that she hasn't paid for, then chances are she's breaking the law.
Of course. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck.
You bet. Bye now.
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, this is, I hadn't heard of MP3 Skull, so now all of our listeners will go out there and pirate themselves some music.
There are so many sites like that out there, and they're usually pretty short-lived. You know, they don't stay up more than a few months at a time.
There's an app that someone uses called 8-Track. But every time they mention it, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm listening to 8-Track. And so if you're above a certain age, you're like, wow, really?
That's so hipster retro.
Can you still find players that'll do that?
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. We've got a call in the queue. All the lines are up. What is that cool noise?
I don't know.
I think there's a signal coming from within the matrix.
Ooh.
That's neat.
Or it's coming from the studio.
The Jeff Goldblum ID4 timing bug.
I muted my mic, so that shouldn't have been me.
No, it's coming from in here.
Sounds like an alarm.
Should we be fleeing the studio?
There's not enough flashing lights. Is somebody ringing the doorbell?
No.
No.
There's something beeping in
the studio.
There's something beeping in this studio on this side.
That's cool. All right, well, let's take this call, and then we still have open lines if you want to be on the air, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, who
yes.
do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, I have two email questions.
Okay.
One is regarding a rumor. My wife said that she heard on TV about this, and then someone else mentioned it to me, and I don't believe it can possibly be true, that people will get into your computer and freeze your email, and then will send you a message and tell you that for a fee they will release the freeze. Now, if your email's frozen, how do they contact you? And if they've got your email address, how would they know your phone number? So this doesn't sound logical to me. Have you ever heard of this?
Well, there is one virus that goes out that will actually encrypt your data.
Green card.
Yeah, it'll actually encrypt your data so you can't get access to your files. And then the program that does it has a little pop-up that says if you want to get access to your files, then call this number or make a payment at this website, and they'll send you the decryption key to unencrypt your files.
So, how in the world can they get away with that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's...
I mean, where's the FBI here?
What are they going to do? I mean, the code is in the wild, and then the places that are actually taking the money are overseas, so... The ability to police it is pretty limited.
Well, here's another question. I've had my email address for 10 years, and just lately, last couple of weeks, maybe a month or so, I'm getting these emails that are, you know, saying notice of eviction, urgent court summons to court. I haven't opened any of them. Do you have a clue what that's all about?
It's called phishing. What they want to do is get something where you go, I have to respond. I have to click the link in this and find out what the deal is. And then they try to look official, and it says, oh, here, put in your name, your phone number, your Social Security number, so we can check on your case. And then you just handed them,
everything they need.
Handed them everything they wanted.
Well, so, just to tell all your listeners that I have learned that the IRS and the court systems – will send a person to your house, a sheriff with a summons. They don't do it
they
by
don't
email
do it via
ever.
Email.
So it's obviously a scam, but it makes you wonder how dumb we are.
Well, apparently people are quite dumb, and they will fall for it quite frequently, and it doesn't take them any energy, really, to do it. So they can send out a million emails, and if only one sucker falls for it, then it pays for itself.
Oh, and then I got another thing. I have a local councilwoman here in my small town, and she's also does a column in the local paper every week. And I got an email from her, and then it looked real fishy. It didn't make any sense. And she mentioned in her column that she'd been hacked, and her computer had become a bot or something. Now, I just got another one from her, and when I opened it, because I was expecting an email, it had a hot link to some bizarre, aliens in Mars or something. It was a really strange address. What are they doing? I didn't click the link, and I'm hoping the email didn't infect me, but if you click these links, what happens? Is it a virus? Or?
Well, a lot of the times it'll take you to a site that has malware that will try to take advantage of vulnerabilities in your web browser or your operating system and install itself.
And if you don't put any data as far as your Social Security, bank, credit card on the computer, What do they get out of this? I know I asked this question a couple of weeks ago, but
yeah, we tried to go over this with you a couple of weeks ago, and like I said, I can take and just a hand. It's like throwing a stick of dynamite in a pond. You know,
and you get what you get.
You get what floats to the surface.
You've got no data.
If you don't have anything, you know, it's like your house gets broken into. If you have a big screen TV, they take it. If you don't have a big screen TV, you just have a broken door or a window.
All right. So there's no danger of infection.
Well, there's danger of infection, but there's what you're going to lose is really dependent on what you have stored on your PC and what information you provide to these people.
All right, so now...
Listen, thanks for your call. Got to let you go. One question after another. We've been down that road before, so I'm not going to rehash that. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, I see the light blinking of a call trying to get in. We got a few minutes here before the top of the hour. We might be able to get one more call in before we take that short break. Oh, they're gone already. So Groovehouse, he blew it or something.
They gave up.
They gave up too soon.
Yeah.
All right. So, not to go too far off the deep end with this, but I think a lot of, because it doesn't take any energy really to set up a script that takes a database full of email addresses and sends an email out to millions of people. And some of them are designed to advertise products. Some of them are designed to get you to click on a link and provide your personal information to a site. Some of them are designed to infect your system with, malware built into the site. And some of them, I think, are just people who are getting started just testing. You know, I've gotten email before that the body of the message looked like a template.
Misconfigured mass mail or something. Yeah,
just a proof of concept, because it doesn't take any effort or energy. Once you get it, you're setting it up on your computer, you basically say, here's all of my email addresses. I'm going to now use this RoboSender and deliver them all. And so, it takes you a couple of minutes to do it. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us this evening, we've got about 5 minutes or so before we have to take a break. Or actually about 7 minutes before we have to take a break at the top of the hour. We could probably squeeze a call in, but don't know that that'll happen. We're going to have a whole other hour coming up after station business to continue to talk to you and answer your questions. So 713-526-5738 is the number to call. I see the phone ringing. Groovehouse looks up, plucks the headphones from his head, and answers the phone. This is your play-by-play Groovehouse report.
Groovehouse is showing good form, having a strong day. Stiff neck, holding the phone, cradling it. Good typing form.
Yeah, see, it's the way he slants his eyes towards
good
the
focus.
Screen.
Good
laser,
focus.
Laser focus, one might
He's
say.
coming off of a little bit of a down week last week when the phones weren't ringing so much. He just wasn't connecting with the listeners. But he looks like he's ready to, stand up there.
He's going into a tailspin.
Well, he looks like he's got himself a chatty one. He's got himself a chatty one on the phone right now. They are just talking his ear off because sometimes when the callers call in, they don't realize Groovehouse is not there to answer their question. But Groovehouse takes one for the team. All right, so what do we have, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, you are going to speak with James.
I'm going to speak with James. Hi, James.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I was just wondering, you know how you guys have the geek gathering meetings?
Yeah.
Well, are there any, hot chicks at those meetings? Like, any geeky, hot chicks, that kind of thing?
There are definitely girls that come around, and some might say that they're cute.
Depending on the episode, we've had
school girls
there.
I mean, it just really depends. Like, every other month, we have the cheerleader contest.
Oh, okay.
And, we get a lot of people dressed up in cheerleader, a lot of girls dressed in cheerleader outfits.
But the question you might also need to ask is, are there any hot dudes there?
No.
Well, I'm just saying, because if there's hot dudes there, then you might not get the hot chick.
Yeah, what do you bring into the table?
Oh, yeah, what do you bring? Yeah, right. Yeah, there's hot chicks, but they're not interested in you or something.
Okay.
However, I mean,
anyway,
if you're...
I thought it was worth asking, so...
If you're looking for like a geeky girl, though, there I know that Houston Nerd Night or Nerd Night Houston, they're talking about doing some kind of a celebrity auction where they're doing like tributes.
That's
they're auctioning
what that
off
was for. I
a guy
who was doing
and
that.
A girl. Yeah, and I think the money goes to like charity of the tributes naming, but I don't know who they're going to line up or who they're going to have. But go to Twitter and look for Nerd Night Houston,
and you'll see info about that. I've been to the first. Two, three,
I just want to say it to all of our listeners that every girl who shows up at the Geek Gathering
is
awesome and hot.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not.
It's not. I will say this. It's not an event that people, I don't think, come to it to hook up.
It's not a meat market.
It's not that kind of deal.
It's not like a speed dating type event.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a speed dating. It's over before it started. So if you're looking, I mean... If you're looking to objectify women and take advantage of nerd girls, we're not the place for you.
No, at all. I mean, but I was also curious, but they have to be, like, geeky. That's the main thing.
There are definitely geeky girls there. Like, most of the girls that show up, if not all the girls, know their stuff, you know, generally.
Okay, cool. All right, thanks.
But maybe when they hear you're going to be there, they'll show up in bigger numbers.
We're going to put out the word. James, if you show up, we'll put out the word that you're there, and the numbers should triple.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
All right, thanks, James. Bye. All right, yeah. I feel offended. Why does he ask if there's any bald, fat guys there? Because we got fat in spades. All right, Groovehouse is screening a call for the second half of the show, I'm guessing, because we are approaching the part where we have to, you know, take a short break and all that. But if you want to get in the queue for the second hour of the show, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. And that will get you, what do I do, Groovehouse? We're going to save them for the second half? Yeah, all right. So that's what we're going to do. You know, as I was stepped outside during the Technology Bites info shot, and the delay here was like
it's a minute. It's almost a minute, yeah.
Almost a minute.
It's significant.
It's really so... You're listening to this right now. We are already on our break.
We exist ahead of time.
Yes. All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Future Barrett.
And that's
Future Groovehouse.
We'll be back after these messages.
Stick around.
Back to the future.
KPFT recientemente ha finalizado su campaña de membresías que tuvo al aire. Si usted fue uno de los muchos radioescuchas quienes se unieron a esta campaña, muchas gracias. Antes de que lo sepa, su sobre de membresía llegará por correo. No olvide mandar su donación. El gran sentimiento que usted obtiene cuando apoya KPFT es mejor una vez que usted haya colocado su cheque en el correo. Y si usted perdió la oportunidad de unirse y apoyar las noticias, la música u otra gran programación que usted escucha cada día, aún hay tiempo. Únase por vía internet visitando la página www.kpft.org y haga su parte. Gracias una vez más por apoyar a la radio de la comunidad. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
Thanks to everyone who came out to the February Geek Gathering. It was a ton of fun. A very abbreviated Barrett Time tonight because I wasn't able to scoot out of the office on time due to some power issues. So, the weather is going to be nice this weekend, which is perfect because the H-Town Scoot Down, Houston's own scooter rally, is happening this weekend at various locations around town. If you ride a scooter or have ever been curious about taking to two wheels, at least on neighborhood surface streets, you may want to stop by Cone's this Friday night to hear some music, eat some food, and talk to two-wheeled step-through transportation with some of Houston's scooterati. Here come the girls. We'll be laying down some mod music starting a little after 7. This year's rally's incarnation is named Houston. We have a rally and features a space theme throughout, complete with a HAL 9000-esque glowing red eye. Anyway, you can attempt to open the pod bay doors by opening up any web browser made after 2001 and then voyaging to htownscootdown.com. And that's pretty much it. I'd normally say that that's it. I'd normally say that that's it for something, that that's that for Barrett Time, but I'm afraid I can't do that. This mission is too important to allow me to jeopardize. This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye. It was a
close
week.
The Barrett Time, Hal.
Weak, Hal. Weak, Hal. I'll work on that next time.
All right, somebody on IRC suggested that we might want to consider actually doing geek speed dating at the Geek Gathering. But due to the ratio...
And then they said, no, not really. but KD5 did say, you know what, we do hook up...
cables.
Components to microcontrollers.
We're on the hook.
Yeah, come get your hookup. We can do 5-pin, 9-pin, IC2, Ethernet, 10 base T.
I can't decide. Would geek speed dating be something that happens so fast you can't tell that it already came and went?
Yep, date's over.
Or would it be so slow that by the time the guy, the people approached the table to talk to each other that their time would be up and they're supposed to try and approach the next table?
Geek speed dating is where you actually work up the courage to talk to the girl within the 6th or 7th geek gathering you attend.
Yeah, exactly.
First you start by sitting in the outside area, and then you kind of move in.
You know your geek speed dating when your opening line is, weren't you at the geek gathering in March of 2003?
Weren't you at the 10th anniversary party?
Hey, I've done that before.
Yeah. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls. We got one call in the queue we're about to go to. We have all the rest of the lines are open, so we can make this show all chatty and friendly by having you call in at 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Sorry, did I interrupt?
I'm sorry.
What were you doing? I didn't mean to interrupt.
What? Me?
Do we have a call?
Oh, yes. Hi.
All right.
Oh, Technology Bites.
You know what?
Oh, it's Wednesday.
Remember Barrett and his power supplies?
Yeah.
You remember that beeping we heard earlier today?
Yeah.
On the show?
Yeah.
Barrett brought his problems with
UPS
him.
UPS that's been following me all day, man.
Is there a UPS here?
under the desk.
Is it failing?
Yes.
What's it plugged into? Or rather, what is plugged into the EPS? What's going to die here?
The transmitter.
Yeah,
the transmitter.
Our sense of humor.
No, this is true. It's true. Groovehouse talked to the station people.
He did.
They're aware of the situation.
The station people. It sounds like invasion of the station people.
So how long can we power a 40,000-watt transmitter on a little bitty...
Failing UPS?
Yeah, on a trip light
like
UPS.
320-watt UPS.
We're about to find out.
All right, Groovehouse.
Okay, yes.
Hey,
we got room for more calls at 713-526-5738. Give us a call if you've got a computer question. And we have one now for the second half of the show. That caller is Herman.
Herman, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, I have a quick question. I just bought a laptop from a guy. I'm trying to upgrade to Windows 7, you know, due to all the XP things, okay? I'm kind of just driving up. I'm an old school Linux guy. Dig it?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm saying, I've never heard of Viper Security, and is that affiliated with McAfee? And also, what do you guys feel about the Hypillion website? And I'll hang up and listen, okay?
What was that? What was the last website? Hypillion?
Hypillion website. And
how do you spell it?
Actually, don't hang up.
Don't hang up. Let's first of all, Viper, I thought was a security system for cars.
No, it's like VIPR.
It's an AVS. Yeah, it's an antivirus that's out there.
Yeah, it's
that's
an antivirus
niche.
Thing. Yeah, I've never heard of it. All right.
I've never heard of it either. I would stick with something standard. You know, if you want to go with free, you have AVG and Avast.
Right. What about MBAM?
MBAM is what is MBAM? I think a D-band, MBAM.
That's Malware Bytes.
Oh, that's Malware Bytes. Malware Bytes anti-malware. That's an anti-malware program for cleaning up spyware infections.
It doesn't do active scanning.
So I need both.
Right?
I need, like, malware and also antivirus, right?
Well, if you're running a Windows computer and you're an old-school Linux guy, as you say, then you're probably not as familiar with Windows-style viruses and malware. So it's good to protect yourself with a good antivirus program and at least one good malware program, but also just teach yourself to behave on the Internet so you don't click on bad stuff.
Oh, but see, okay, so what I did, I just downloaded Microsoft Essentials from the website and put it on my Windows 7.
That's so you covered antivirus wise. Then you don't need anything else.
Yeah. So now you're saying I need a malware thing.
You don't need it if you find yourself infected with spyware or something. You might want to have it handy so you can scan your system and clean it up.
I kind of know all about that, and I administrate my system at the house, but it's like, I never did any hits of something bad, so I don't think it's good. You understand what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Okay.
All right. If you've got a computer that's running Windows, you've got Microsoft Security Essentials, so you've got your antivirus solution in place, you're probably fine for the most part.
Okay.
The problem with spyware and malware is that sometimes if you go to a certain website or you download certain programs and you install spyware on your system, the antivirus doesn't catch it. Because you've installed it. So you find yourself with a computer that's misbehaving, you're getting a lot of pop-up ads, you're getting a lot of, you know, slowness and performance and stuff.
Right.
So
that's my thing, yeah.
So you need to scan it with some anti-spyware tools like Malwarebytes or something like that, just to check to make sure you got a clean system.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Go with MBAM.
Yeah, go with MBAM.
Nice.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. MBAM. Malwarebytes anti-malware. They offer a free version of their software. Great stuff. You know, I had one. God, speaking of spyware, and I don't literally want to be speaking of spyware, but speaking of spyware, I had one that one of my users at the office managed to get on her computer, and it went through and basically killed off the VPN service. It apparently set her DNS servers to be Google DNS, which I can't see that as being a bad thing necessarily, but it certainly broke her ability to resolve internal hosts on the network. So it reset that. It set up a proxy server, so it was sending everything through a proxy, and it did something to Java that was so weird. I mean, if you go to Java's site and it tries to load the Java applet, or even if there's any Java on the site, it just didn't load inside of Internet Explorer.
How's that different than Java normally?
Yeah. No, I mean, I uninstalled Java, tried to go to java.com, but it kept causing the page to refresh, and it was so broken. I could not get it out. And I actually, it was one of those deals. I against my better wishes, I chose to spend the whole day trying to get it clean. And after I'd spent about 6 hours on it, hunched over, my back was starting to kill me, I said, look, you know, this is pretty much a brand new computer. I know you just installed all your programs, but we need to just wipe it because it's just a return on the investment. So I took the image, re-imaged the computer, and I was done in an hour. So it was just an exercise in futility trying to get rid of this one. So there's some pretty nasty stuff out there. And that's one of the reasons. I mean, you have antivirus, you have anti-malware programs. There are ways to clean it up if you get infected, but sometimes it really just boils down to you have to back up your data and reload your system because this stuff gets so wedged in there. Everything was, once I was done, before I decided to re-image it, I had it where it was basically working, but the Java stuff wasn't working in IE. And even though it had established a connection to the internet, it said no internet access. And I could still browse sites and stuff, but I had that yellow exclamation point that wouldn't go away. Tried making a new profile that didn't work. So sometimes if you just want to be done with it and you want to make sure you've got it all gone, reloading your system is the way to go. All right, 713-526-5738. People keep calling in. Groovehouse keeps answering the phone, but what's going on? Is it crazy people?
Oh, you know, it's...
The usuals?
Hi, I just want to say hello to Groovehouse.
We love you, Groovehouse.
You know.
Hey, I've got a blank chalkboard. I need a menu done up on it. Yeah, I heard you were the man. Heard you were like willing to stay up late, away from home to do it. So, Groovehouse. All right. So all the lines are quiet.
Can you do JavaScript menus? Like with CSS or like?
If I could, man.
You need an LED. You need some kind of flat screen that emulates a chalkboard.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
Where you could just type it in. And it had chalk fonts.
Oh, well, they do exist. Chalk fonts do exist.
Do they?
Handwritten chalk style fonts do exist. Yeah, they're really cool.
Huh.
Yeah.
So yeah.
They're the Comic Sans of the menu.
Oh, we went there.
Did. All right. Well, we're just going into the doldrums here where it gets nice and quiet during the show. And, you know, are the Rockets playing? Is there a Star Trek movie on?
There might be a game
on
tonight.
I feel...
Is there Walking Dead or something on?
No, that's
Walking Dead's dead.
Oh. It's done for the, I guess, maybe the year.
That's Sunday nights,
maybe
right?
Lost is on.
What's
Lost
that?
Is Lost.
Maybe Lost is on.
So is the show Homeland all they say it is?
I haven't seen or heard anything about that.
Has anybody watched
anybody?
It?
Mm-hmm.
There, my wife watches it. She liked the first season, and I think after that it started getting weird.
Jay, you might like to start watching maybe Peep Show on Netflix.
Ah, it's Peep British, Show is
got,
good.
British
got,
comedy, really funny.
Peep Show.
Yeah. That thing shows up in my queues of suggestions.
You got to get through the first couple of episodes, but once you
that's
do,
one with David Mitchell in it.
Yes.
Yeah, David
Mitchell and Webb. Yeah.
Mitchell and Webb.
Yeah.
I love David Mitchell.
If you like Mitchell and Webb look, because they've done a lot of stuff together. And they recycle a lot of the characters you see over and over and over, so it's worthwhile. Even to the point where a lot of the characters used in that have shown up in Doctor Who in the reboot. you'll recognize them.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. As aliens and as different things, they make appearances.
Peep Show, cool. It's not just like a Friends-style comedy?
It's yeah, but it's a little bit more BBC, more funny, a little bit raunchier in places. Not raunchier, just kind of grosser situations. More IT bachelory kind of situations, probably.
Well, I love David Mitchell on when he's on. Well, there's a show called Would I Lie to You, which is a great quiz show, BBC quiz show, and he is hilarious on that. And when he shows up on QI, he's pretty funny. I like David Mitchell. If you do a Google search on or video search on David Mitchell soapbox, he has some great rants.
So, well, there's been, I know we've got a call in the queue and another one coming in, but there's been a lot of stuff I've been seeing on social media and just like, you know, not necessarily like Huffington Post, but a lot of backlash against the Big Bang. And even though people are saying like, hey, it's cool to be a geek, and everyone's saying, hey, let's be a geek, that the Big Bang Theory is treating geeks incorrectly in that it's laughing at them and not necessarily with them. And I was like, well, I don't know. I haven't really watched it in a while. I used to be a pretty big fan of it, and I kind of get that. What kind of made me upset was have you seen Community?
Yeah.
So I don't watch that very often, but there was a D&D episode where they're all playing Dungeons & Dragons, and that actually, to me, pegged the geek aspect of everything and that whole gaming thing better than any of the little one-line references about D&D or one-line references about Star Trek that Big Bang Theory makes. So I was pretty impressed by that. I'm sure the other episodes aren't all like that.
Community was good.
That was really good. That one episode was
Community
really good.
Community is really
And then
good.
I saw one other thing, an episode where they were kind of playing around with, like, Dr. Spacetime, which was a direct thing to Doctor Who. And I was like, that's really geeky, too. That's really awesome. And it's smart, and it's you're laughing with them, not like, oh, wow, they're such geeks. Isn't that sad? Which is kind of how I feel the Big Bang is kind of going. Big Bang Theory, rather.
Maybe.
I'm just biased on that, but that's...
I kind of like the Big Bang Theory just because it's a gateway to geekdom. I mean, it's one of the things that got Cynthia turning into a nerd or wanting to become a little bit more interest, you know, have more understanding of geek culture, because it introduces memes and things like that that are, you know, like the one episode of Big Bang where they're waiting to try to get tickets to Comic-Con, you know, and you kind of identified with them because they couldn't get tickets, because it becomes so much part of the pop culture, the modern culture, that everybody was going to the Comic-Con, and the people who had been going to Comic-Con forever couldn't get in. So it's kind of sad.
So this could just be geeks being upset at other geeks on the internet. Possibly. It could be a case of that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's not a great, great representation, because those guys are all the characters are scientists, you know, and they're not like, I mean, they're socially maladjusted somewhat, but they've got good educations and they've got good careers and they're doing just fine. All right. We got a call in the queue. Groovehouse, you want to give that to us, I think?
They hung up and...
They probably dropped in or
I don't have
back.
A call in the queue, so hang tight. We'll have one.
I see one blinking
right,
green.
That was the person I put on hold that I was going to speak to after we took the call, but that call hung up.
You
and
got
so
someone else coming in.
He's hanging on there, so I'm going to go back and get him, and
all
then
right,
we'll get the other
give
guy.
Give us a name, and then we'll go from there. But, yeah, I mean, I still like it. But Community is brilliant.
I was impressed.
They just had one that the last episode was... one of the main characters went drunk himself unconscious, and he envisioned himself as the 1980s G.I. Joe cartoon.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they had they did a whole spoof of the message at the end of the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Knowing's half the battle.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And it was the names of the characters were hilarious. Buzzkill and Fourth Wall. And it was a good one. All right, so Groovehouse has a call for us.
Yes.
All right, Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening. My question is, I'm looking for a browser, a different one.
Okay.
I got rid of Google, and I've got Internet Explorer right now. And when I downloaded the last update, I started getting sponsored pop-ups. And I uninstalled that right away and went back to the previous Internet Explorer. But I'd like to find something, a different option altogether.
What didn't you like about Google Chrome?
Other than the fact that you can't trust them with any information whatsoever.
Well, just using Chrome doesn't it put your information at any more risk than just using the internet, I don't think.
Yes, sir. Well, they've got great efficiency, but I'd rather be a little bit slower and a little more secure.
Well, take a look at Firefox.
Yes, sir.
Then your other option is going to be Opera, but those are the only two legitimate players out there. Would be Firefox and Opera as far as larger browsers.
Okay.
Are you trying to find a more secure way of surfing the internet in that you don't trust Chrome, or you just don't like what Google's up to?
I would say more the Google side of it.
Okay, yeah, then check out Firefox.
Okay, now whenever I checked that one out the first time, it immediately went to the Chrome. How do I get that out of there?
That's weird. So you're going to have to open up some web browser to go download the other web browser. So if you actually go to google.com or go to Bing and you search for get Firefox, Firefox is all one word, like fire and then the animal.
Yes, sir.
The very first link should not take you to the Google Chrome site, but to the Firefox download site. So that's where you want to wind up.
Okay, get Firefox.
Mm-hmm. That should be your search term.
Yeah,
just make sure that you're going to
Mozilla.com.
You'll
end up at a Firefox site that has the download link. You can also just do a search on download Firefox, and you'll end up at firefox.com/download or something like that. You'll know you're at the right site. Download the installer and install it, and then Firefox will be your browser.
All right, sir. I appreciate that very much.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Will do.
Yeah. What happened, Groovehouse?
Nothing.
There's calls they're missing.
Yeah, you know. Station business. What's the address of the place? You know.
You're not like losing patience with the callers as it goes
on. No, not at all.
You know,
I have a great rapport with the callers, but you know, they're not always for us.
I understand.
The deal. Yeah.
Take my call, please.
All right. There's a call coming in now. Groovehouse is screening. 713-526-5738. Technology Bites. Here on your Wednesday night, talking computers. You know, I was talking to somebody about the olden days, and that just made me really tired. So now I need to get perked back up by some great calls, asking great questions. Because the olden days were a long time ago. 713-526-5738. I see Groovehouse has got the call queued up. So
this is a really good question because it's kind of on my mind as well. So
okay,
you ready?
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna speak with Daryl.
Daryl, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay, and I'll be better if I can find a replacement for Winamp.
What do you use Winamp for primarily?
To spank the lava.
whip the lava's ass.
No, yeah, obviously, listening to music, also downloading podcasts and listening to podcasts. And also, I love that I could wirelessly transfer music to my Android device. Mm-hmm.
So you're on Windows and Android primarily?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Winamp's going away or it's retiring?
Gone. You can't get it on the Google Play anymore. I think you can find old copies, the Windows version out there.
Yeah.
I've got almost every version of it archived since like 1.0, circa 1997.
So really you're looking for something for your phone more than for your PC, right?
Well, okay, here's what I want for my PC. Actually, I'm looking more for something for my PC.
Okay.
I want something that can play both MP3s and OGG files, because when I was ripping all my CDs, I ripped the OGG.
Yeah, the Ogg Vorbis.
Yeah, Ogg Vorbis, and I wanted to be able to play both types gapless.
So you're on Android. Do you have a solid internet connection at home? Like, are your computers always hooked up?
Yes.
Would you mind streaming the music versus, like, playing it locally?
Well, that's fine for my computer, but for my Android device.
You might want to check out, and I'm not a huge fan of like streaming services, but I've been using Google Play,
mm-hmm.
recently, and what it lets you do is you can actually, you know, you can load it up, and whether you use iTunes or it'll actually go into a number of music libraries. It'll scan what's on your computer, and then it'll go into the Google services, and it'll say, like, hey, this guy has this record, these songs, this track, the stuff that's unique that it doesn't have, it'll actually upload over your system, and then at that point, you can get to that from Android. You can stream it from whatever Android device you're logged into, which is kind of nice. So, you know, you go into your Android phone, you can see every song that you've uploaded, you know, from there. And then you can also say, hey, I want to download these songs locally, to where if you're ever on your phone and you don't have, you know, a good Wi-Fi connection, you don't have, you maybe you're not within range of a tower, you can actually listen to that without having to stream it, which is kind of nice. So it's kind of like a, you know, like an over-the-air music synchronization program that's just for Android. But again, you know, you're putting all your music with Google, and I think, you know, there's a free version that gives you maybe 1,000 or a couple thousand songs of storage. And then if you want to pay like a couple bucks a month, I think it goes up to, you know, like tens of thousands of tracks or something.
Check out VLC Media Player.
VLC?
Yeah, they have a Windows client and they have an Android client.
Will it sync between the two?
I don't know. I haven't done that kind of thing for us. It plays all files in all formats, like the classic VLC.
I've used VLC for video codecs for years, and it's solid. It'll play just about anything you have out there.
Yeah, if I can't get a video to open or anything else, I can get it to open in VLC almost always. But it might be worth. It's free, and it might be worth having a look at. I don't know what the full features are of it. The Android app is a beta app, so it's pretty new for them. But their Windows client and their Mac client are both extremely solid. And I think it'll actually even let you convert, if you wanted to, between OGG and other formats.
I will definitely give that a look. Yeah, I have a feeling that I'm probably not going to find something that does the transfer between the computer and the Android device, since it seems like everything is going to the cloud now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, both your major carriers, you know, Google has, you know, a horse in the race, as does, you know, Apple, and they're not going to make it really easy, and they're not going to promote other, you know, applications that let you sync music when they've got something that they want to sell
you. So Google Play basically does the same thing as iTunes Match.
Pretty much, yeah. Another one. Digital music storage.
There's
locker.
Also there's a Winamp clone called AIMP3, and it looks like it's hosted on a Russian site, but it might be worth checking out. I don't know what all the features are of that either. But
the hard thing you're going to have finding, there are tons of players. The hard thing is going to be, like you said, syncing the music up between, you know, the Winamp replacement and your Android phone. Because I'm not seeing a lot of stuff that does that right now.
Yeah, I tried the AIMP3. And it was okay, but I noticed they seemed to be kind of cheating on the gapless playback. It looked like it was really kind of a quick crossfade. So that's been
a Winamp is a solid program. Why are they quitting? Why is it going away?
I don't know. I know someone at one time bought them. Like, did Lavasoft buy them? And then Null. They've been changed around a couple times.
I know Nullsoft was. Did it for a long time.
Let's see. Oh, ooh,
the guy's
bad. AOL bought them and they're shutting them down.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Wow, I was actually forgotten that I didn't like AOL. And now everything
it's
old
all
is new
back
again.
To you.
Yeah, yep. AOL shutting them down. 2013. Winamp.com, Associated Web Services. And all the Winamp media players are going away. And it's been out, been out since 1997 is when it first came out.
I've been using it forever, and I love it, and I'm sad to see it go.
Yeah, Nullsoft bought it back in the day, and they were doing fine. And then Nullsoft was acquired by AOL in 99, and then here we go, you know, 14, 15 years later, they're pulling the plug.
Yeah. Also, check out the latest offering from Real. The Real Player. I don't know if that has
Real Audio.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's going back even further than Winamp.
Well, they've your .re files.
Well, they've been updating. It's now the Real Player Cloud, and they're doing more cloud-based stuff, to where you take your music live, you get whatever media, put it in a cloud, stream it to all your devices.
If you get one of the 16 kilohertz screams, streams, it sounds not that tinny.
Well, they don't even focus. The thing is, Real doesn't even focus on RA and RM formats anymore.
No longer.
Like, no. Buffering. Like their Helix Real server is geared towards playing any other format. I mean, they can still play real audio and real video, you know, real media video formats, but they're basically universal players now. So they'll play H.246 MP4. They'll play QuickTime format. They'll play AVIs.
They'll play OGG. Else. They'll do all of it right now. It's just something. I mean, they've only recently popped back up on my radar because I was looking around and I saw that they kind of they're trying to up their game a little bit. I don't know if they've gotten there yet, but they do have a number of Android apps out as well. So some they got some stuff to check out. I hope that helps.
Oh, check out just real quick. Check out Double Twist too, just in case. I know that I've used that for video before on Android. I don't know if it's going to have music syncing stuff, but there are a lot of people with your complaint and. Everybody's being pushed into the cloud. So, you know, if you find anything, call us back and let us know.
All right. So Double Twist?
Yeah.
All right.
Double Twist. All right. Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks. I'll check those out.
All right. Thanks for calling. Yeah, because it looks like Real Player Beta for the Android is pretty new. Third among our music player for Android options is Real Player Beta, which is complete with an intuitive.
Does AOL have a music player? Is there a reason why they would pull the plug on Winamp? Like, do they have a competing product, or they just didn't want to shell out the money for development anymore?
Don't know. Amazon MP3.
Yeah, which is, that's another one, but again, it's cloud-based.
Yeah. iTunes. Oh, wait, Android. Never mind. All right. So Groovehouse has got the calls flowing in now. He's screening the third one before he can hand us over a call here. But there he goes. He's rushing to his headphones. He slaps it on his head.
Station business. Yo, breath. DJ, chill. You owe me one.
Oh.
If you're listening.
All right, DJ, chill. You need to bring some chill sauce.
I'm calling in damage control, and I'm saying, hey, man, my computer won't work.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to start doing.
Dropping this track. All right, Groovehouse.
Yo.
Who do we have?
Can y'all shout out a virus to my computer?
You like shout out an antivirus to my computer, yo, yo, yo.
How about a line of code for that OpenSSL thing?
Yeah, I'm going to drop her like a bad SSL. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Rob.
Rob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I was just getting out of the Grand Budapest movie, and I was wondering what you guys had seen it and what your take was on it compared to the other Wes Anderson movies out there.
Groovehouse has seen it. Have you seen it, Groovehouse?
I have seen it. I'm a huge,
Groovehouse loves Wes
Anderson. I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. I think it's another one, another great movie. Although, I mean, it's even more Wes Anderson than
is
the previous
Is it filled
Wes
with
Anderson.
Wes Anderson symmetry?
Oh, immensely, yes. Let me ask, a lot of it. It's incredible.
I haven't seen it yet, but did you notice the changes in the filming aspects as they went throughout the movie? Was that noticeable?
I totally noticed it. It went from widescreen to, like, a full-screen regular television set.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. I've been trying to read a little bit about it without reading up on any of the actual spoilers, and I've not yet seen
it. I didn't notice that, but I'm sure when I see it again, I'll notice it this time. Yeah, but, I mean, if you're a Wes Anderson fan and you love what he does, then, you know, this movie is just right along with all the rest. Now, Flicked, on the other hand, he's a different kind of Wes Anderson
fan. If it's not Bottle Rocket?
Yeah, if it's not Bottle Rocket,
no, I'm an old-school Wes Anderson fan.
And by old-school, you mean pre-Rushmore, and that
pre-Bottle Rocket. Once he made Bottle Rocket, it was all
even like a Wes Anderson
movie. It's been downhill since Bottle Rocket. I mean, Rushmore was really good. Don't get me wrong. Royal Tenenbaums, also good. Life Aquatic, eh.
It all went downhill when I realized it wasn't Wes Craven we were talking about. Like, what is this?
So, Rob, how do you think it stacked up against the other Wes Anderson fare?
Well, I went with my fiance, and she said that it was the best one she'd seen. But I love Rushmore. That's one of my favorite movies. So I don't really think that it, you know, completely overclocked that. But I think it was pretty good.
Did you see Rushmore a week ago? They played it here in Houston.
No, I didn't. I didn't know. Where did they play it?
The Museum of Fine Arts, which is kind of cool because they won't have like big openings. But I think like Wes Anderson's dad was there, and you know they'll usually try and do like, and we shouldn't tell this over the air, but they'll generally try and do like a screening for Wes Anderson's parents, like his mom lives here in Houston, his dad lives here in Houston. So they will do screenings, and you can get tickets generally. So if you want to see the movies when they open, it's kind of cool. And usually there's somebody there. Like, I think when the Fantastic Mr. Fox opened, I went to go see it there, and his mom and his dad were there, and then Roald Dahl's grandson was there and talked about, like, you know, his grandfather and how he wrote the book, and I'll answer questions about everything from that to James and the Giant Peach. So it's a really neat experience because Houston, you know, we're home to Wes Anderson. It seems like we get passed over for a lot of the really cool opening stuff, but if you know where to look, that's not necessarily the case.
Well, next time the Wes Anderson movie's coming out, I'll definitely keep my ears out, and I won't tell them where I heard it.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for your call. All right. So, yeah, apparently, you know, that's part of geek culture. And Houston, I guess, because he's a local boy, and he's makes everybody in Houston happy.
I missed that call. I've been on the phone the whole call, and I was just like, I wanted to hear that call so bad, so it's archives for me.
Yeah.
Womp, 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 womp.
We're getting more aggressive with telling people to hold up. All right. So, you know, I was driving through town. I was caught this Wes Anderson show.
Exactly.
All right. Which Wes Anderson movie are you?
Bottle Rocket.
You're Bottle Rocket. All right. So,
Maybe which Wes Anderson movie character are you?
Which Wes Anderson movie character in Bottle Rocket are you?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I've not seen a single Wes Anderson film from beginning to end.
Can we take his mic down?
Yeah.
Wow.
your Houston privileges have been revoked.
Yeah, we're going to do a Clockwork Orange, toothpicks in the eyelids, forced screening immediately after we go off air.
This question is not directed at Flicked, who I know will answer what...
Bottle Rocket.
Which movie should I see...
Start with Bottle Rocket.
Start with Bottle Rocket.
Start with Rushmore.
Because you're
going
to see... Rushmore.
Start with Rushmore.
Start with Rushmore.
You could see Bottle Rocket. It's pre all the crazy Wes Anderson stuff, and you'd get a feel for it, and you'll see how he... You know, how that kind of relates to the rest of his movies.
From Bottle Rocket or
Rushmore.
You're going to lose some respect from Flicked, but start with Rushmore.
No, I think start with Rushmore because it's more accessible.
Grindhouse is too artsy. You're too highbrow.
Not that Bottle Rocket isn't, but Bottle Rocket's a little more esoteric in its humor. Rushmore is a little more mainstream humor to me.
Rushmore is like the beginning of the Wes Anderson genre. You know, I mean,
you could see bits
and
pieces.
Which one came out first? Is Bottle Rocket the first one?
Right.
But it's nothing like his movies. It's nothing like what people have come to know and love about Wes Anderson.
There's bits and pieces of it. But it's like a tadpole compared to a frog. Like it's there, but it's not fully formed yet. Even Rushmore, I would say Rushmore is completely fully formed. It's still...
It's 80%
almost there. Almost there, but not quite. I mean, it's really Royal Tenenbaums is where he pretty much hit his stride.
Yeah, but I mean
Rushmore's close.
Whew, it's close.
All right.
I think with Bottle Rocket, he had to appease studio people, right? And then with Rushmore, he was able to do more on his
own.
Which
one has the most aliens?
Life Aquatic.
Aliens? Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
Well, that's true because the there's some weird fish in Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
It that are kind of
took
alien-ish.
A weird turn. His career took a weird turn at Life Aquatic for me because it was like he introduced CGI, and it was like
the soundtracks to all of his stuff is really good, and I really liked on the Life Aquatic the Sue George, the Brazilian singer that was doing all the David Bowie covers was awesome.
Beautiful.
That's actually worth the whole thing.
Yeah,
all right.
Soundtrack.
Let's take a call. Talk about computers.
Let's do that.
All right. Who do we have up, Groovehouse?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Question you might have covered in depth already, but XP, you know, without Microsoft supporting it, you know, what happens there? Does it become less secure?
The best thing I saw tweeted, Ed Bott, I think, retweeted somebody else on Twitter today about... What you do with XP is what you should have been doing all along in terms of, you know, being secure and running, you know, good antivirus software, not clicking on bad links, not, you know, clicking on links in email. The reality is that XP is vulnerable even when it's fully patched. Even when it was fully supported, XP is an extremely vulnerable operating system. So now... Any new exploits or any new vulnerabilities that are discovered in XP will not be patched. So if somebody discovers that if you do such and such to an XP computer, it'll cause this to happen, then everybody, once that gets out in the wild, once people find out that you can do this to an XP machine and have it do something, then people will start doing it. So it's going to become even less secure over time, and probably over a very short period of time. But if you're careful and you use good computer practices, it's still a reasonable operating system to use. I know that there will be people that are upset with me for saying that, but you can continue using it just like you always have been.
Well, the big meltdown that some people thought was going to come today, the thinking was that a lot of people had 0 days and they were just going to sit on them. And the very first day that, you know, there was no more official XP support, all these things were going to be released in the wild, and suddenly XP was going to get beat up in a way that it hadn't in years. But it was really quiet today. Like, nothing really happened. I think all those fears were kind of misplaced. You should still upgrade, you know, but it's not the end of the world.
Okay. All right. That's kind of what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned in my column a couple of weeks ago, there's going to come a point probably where you're going to have to consider replacing your computer because it's going to wear out or break down or just fail. And you're going to be presented then with having to buy a computer with the most recent version of the operating system of your choice, whether that's Mac or whether that's Windows 8.1 or whatever. So your reluctance now, because it's not something you're interested in doing, you're going to be forced into that position eventually.
No, I mean, I'm running it in parallels anyway, so, you know, that's not the issue. It's really the software that runs in that environment that doesn't run well.
Oh, you're fine. So you're running Windows XP inside of Parallels from, like, Windows 7 or from...
From an actual need to run XP because you have applications that won't work otherwise.
Correct.
All right.
You're a little bit safer, especially if you can just go ahead and freeze, you know, that image, that instance. Yeah. And that way, if anything gets in there, you just roll back to the last known good, clean instance of that, and you're good to go.
Right.
But if you're just using it to run certain applications, you're not using it to surf the web and check your email.
Yeah, it's not always on. You're a lot safer than everyone else out there that actually is truly running XP on a dedicated workstation.
And using it for everyday internet access and so forth.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Sure. Cheers, John.
And that's why I still have an XP machine. I've got software that will either I don't own the CDs anymore, or I can't transfer the data to a new OS, and that's why my XP machine is still running.
Well, with the Maker movement, like a lot of the microcontroller hacking stuff, it's all written for XP. Even like stuff that's, you know, that's coming out, because I think it's just so costly to rewrite these tool chains and rewrite everything. I keep a little, you know, netbook around with XP on it, just because there's still software I'll go download, and it's for XP only. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, our last caller had the right idea. I think virtualization is the way to go with that. But even still, some of the older stuff that plugs directly into hardware, those USB drivers are written in such a way that sometimes they did some cheaty stuff, and it doesn't work the way the USB driver should work, and you really need to have that actual hardware connection.
Say I go and buy a new computer tomorrow, Windows 8. Mm-hmm. Can I take that hard drive and put it in the new computer and run? Well, how does virtualization would work for that through Windows?
Well,
would that work at all?
No, that wouldn't work. What you can
need
do.
Need a Mac to do that? Or
No. You could do it, but you have to. You either have to, like, when you virtualize, you either have to get the XP disk and put it in there, and then it's like booting up a little computer.
All right.
And you load the operating system, you load your apps, and then you can just access those apps, but you can access it pretty seamlessly from your other environment. You just basically create a shortcut to the app that's running inside of XP, and it'll run in what they call XP mode or in your guest operating system.
VirtualBox. Okay. I use VirtualBox. I don't use, you know, some of the more expensive ones, but there's Parallels, and what's the other one? There's VMware. I know one of them you can actually point at. I think it's VMware, and it might be like one of the pro versions, but you can point at an existing installation and say, hey,
P2V,
I want
to
make an instance.
Call it
P2V,
physical
virtual.
So what you can do is, you can run this program. You can run, like, VMware, I know, has it, where it'll say, okay, there's the operating system. I'm going to just grab all of that, all the installed apps, all the files, and turn it into a virtual machine that you can then copy over to your other computer, drop it in a folder, and then you load it
that's
right up.
That's something we have to look into.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's certainly an option. That's
I
one
think
of the
that's
reasons.
That's with their professional version.
Yeah, I want to say that's kind of pricey. That's a couple hundred bucks at least.
Okay.
But the other option is to just basically get something like a VirtualBox, load up a copy of XP and then load in your applications, and it should have access to the file system on your Windows 7 computer or Windows 8 computer, and be able to manage files and whatever. So it could be on a PC, it could be on a Mac, you could even do it on Linux.
You can run Win4Lin and actually run Linux apps, or rather Windows apps natively.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Enough of your questions.
Yes, enough of my questions.
Who's up next?
Up next is a question I really am interested in finding the answer for. So we're going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, how you doing, Phyllis?
Good.
Listen, you guys know much about word processors?
A little. I mean, I use one.
Okay. Back in 1988, I bought a Smith Corona word processor.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I've actually used one of those. Holy cow.
Okay, it's not like it's a Model T Ford, you know what I mean?
As well be.
Anyway, hit us with that question.
Okay, I wrote half of a novel on there, and I had, when you put the disk in to save the information, you have to process the disk or something, and it says it can only work on this computer, on this word processor.
You've got to format it, yeah.
Yeah.
Format it, that's what the word is, okay. All right, so now, after that, of course, I had that for about 10 years, and I got a regular computer, and I kept writing. But I have a lot of documents on disks that I had formatted for that word processor, and I don't know how to get that information off those disks now.
Let's see if there's a...
You don't still have that same word processor, right?
Well, believe it or not, I got... It's up in New Jersey in my mom's cellar. The last time I tried to use it, it worked, but that was several years ago.
The first thing you would need is you'd need a floppy disk drive to read the disks.
What size floppies are they?
Huh?
Okay.
What size floppy?
5 1/4, 720s.
Five and a quarter?
Yeah, they're not the 1 point. They're not the high density disks. They're the 720 disks.
For single density. Single density, yeah. 5 1/4.
That's what it looks like. Is that right?
I mean, if you're asking me, I'm really not sure how to.
Disk actually floppy?
Does it have a plastic, a hard plastic shell, or is it a bendable plastic?
A hard plastic.
Okay, so
I think it's the 3.5. I had one of these back in the day. So you've really got two options. I'm looking around for people that have reverse engineered the file format, the disk format, where you can actually get that off. So it might be cheaper to go on eBay or to go in your mom's cellar and just see if you can't, you know, print that out and read it in through OCR. Otherwise, what you're going to do is...
Barrett tends to not forget who he's talking to. All right, so what he's talking about doing is get one of these word processors, get that disk, put it in there, and print out a hard copy of the document.
Okay.
Then you can take that document and you can put it into a scanner, which will do what they call optical character recognition. So it scans the document, turns it into an editable document that you can then bring into Word.
Right.
And then it'll do the best it can with the print job, but you'll still have to go in and clean up the formatting and check for spelling errors and stuff, because it might pick up a zero as an O or something like that. So that's one option.
Okay.
The other option might be that there might be somewhere on this planet someone that can take that disk and read it and create it into a, convert it into some kind of format that could be readable, you know, like dump it onto a CD or something to where you could open it up inside a Word. So that's, convert.
A quick search on it, I found they're basically what one of the sites that was, you know, getting stuff off a Smith Corona word processor, they said there were sort of two options, some sort of ASCII transfer through the modem serial port on the word processor, which would mean you'd have to have one, or you can take the disk to a data recovery service and have them get it onto media that you would use. Now, you'd probably want to explain to them what you've got and make sure it's something that they really could handle.
Okay, but it has to be a format conversion, right? Is there one used to that I can just go to?
But it has to be. Format conversion, right?
No, I thought you were asking: is there a place that you can go to Houston that can actually read Yeah, you, well, you've got to format.
I'm not sure what a data recovery service is, Daniel. I'm, you know, it's not like a garage where you get your engine fixed, right?
Well, here's the deal. The data recovery services will be able to get the data off the disks, but I'm suspecting that the data is still good on the disks. So what people are doing is they're going into Linux, and they're using, like, a DD command, which takes byte per byte off that disk, because the format is something that was proprietary to Smith Corona. And the issue that people are getting is even when they pull this off, they're saying that they go into these files and it's a bunch of gibberish. It's not giving them anything usable.
Really?
So you could go and you could pay some money and get someone to get that data off and put it on like a CD-ROM or put it on a jump drive. But you still might not be. You still need to get into
some
that file
Smith
format.
Corona format.
Yeah. So the thing is, since they haven't released it, you can either go pay someone to reverse engineer it, or you can go look around the web and find someone that has done it, but it's old tech and it's, you know, a lot of work with a little bit of reward. Or, you know, you maybe try and just get it out of an existing word processor.
I see a Smith Corona electric typewriter word processor sell. They're on eBay. They run anywhere from about $15 to $60.
Okay. So but that wasn't the one I had.
I don't know.
I mean, the same.
Which model is it?
Oh, gosh, come on. I don't know. Let me ask you a question. When you talk about data recovery service, a data recovery sensor, whatever, what is that? Is that something I can find?
Okay, there are companies that what they do is they take media, like a floppy disk or a VCR tape or something like that, and they take the data off of that format and move it over to like a CD or a DVD. Like I had some old 8mm films that I shot when I was in high school.
Right.
I don't have an 8mm projector. I couldn't look at the content on there. I didn't have anything to play that back on. I took it to this company. They took that data off the 8mm. They put it onto videotape for me because that's what they do. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about data recovery or data transfer service. Somebody that could take these disks and copy the data onto something that you could then put into your computer. But as Barrett mentioned, because the format for the word processor is proprietary, the data that you created using that word processor would have to be converted, and
I did find a site that has a DOS program for converting Smith Corona PWP files to WordPerfect format.
But you have to get but the thing is, I believe that the problem is that will it read the disk in the way that it's formatted for the word processor, Pete?
Let's see, this one, the site said that
Smith Corona had its own proprietary file format on the disks.
They were kind of breaking
bad.
This site, they weren't talking about how to get it off the disk.
They were assuming you had the file, and then they offer a conversion service.
It says he saves the data to the question is a person has an elderly friend who was using a Smith Corona word processor to save documents. The format is called PWP. He saves the data to a 720K floppy. Is there any way to convert that into Word data? And they don't talk about getting it off the floppy. They may just be in this particular thread. But I, you know, the fact that somebody wrote something that would recover that, you know, that would convert that format should mean that there's some that.
Okay, I found it. Here. I would call these people. There's a place called Pivar Computing Service Incorporated.
Pivar?
PIVAR. They are in Buffalo Grove, Illinois.
Boy.
You can mail them the disk. It says, we read old word processor disks like Brother, Panasonic, Smith Corona, Olivetti. We can convert Apple II disks, and we provide PFS file conversions. Many projects can be completed via email, blah, blah, blah. They've established in 1982. I found them on Yelp. I don't know anything about them, but they offer that service.
Okay.
And you can call them and just tell them what you have.
Right.
So it's PIVAR.com.
Perfect.
Let me make sure that site still actually works. Yeah, Pivar's Conversion Services. That's what they do. They're a data recovery. They take a look at that. They have the equipment to read the disk and hopefully convert it to something that you can use. And it's probably not that expensive.
That would be perfect. You know what I'm going to do? I'm heading back to Jersey at the end of the month, right?
Yeah.
If I can get the old word processor to work, then I'll try the other way. And I'll just bring it to a Kinko's or something and see if I can get it converted to Word. Okay? But if it can't, then I'm going to use this pivar.com and hopefully cross my fingers and maybe they'll be able to get it.
All right.
There you go.
Good luck.
guys, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for your call.
Have a nice night.
5R's website looks like it was made on a Smith Corona word processor.
You can only read two lines at a time.
Those little specialty. There's probably a number of other sites that'll and other places that'll do it. Data conversion.
And I'm sure they're great at what they do.
No, they've got every single. It looks like every single Smith Corona machine listed. Yeah. That they'll go into. And they also read mag tapes. These guys are old school, legitimate 1970s.
That guy's best bet might be just to take it to someone professional the first time. Because if you start reading that thing and it breaks on you or something.
I wonder what how long it's been since he's actually read what he wrote.
I hope it's still good.
It might just be horrible. I had this old, I had this mini.
About this guy who drives around in a Trans Am that talks to.
What? Talks to what?
He's talking about Kit. Knight Rider. I had an old
Michael.
That 8mm movie I was talking about that I wanted to look at again that I filmed in high school, my art piece. And I finally saw it. I was like, God, why did I even?
Let's take this last call.
All right.
All right, last call for the show. We're going to speak with Francis.
Francis, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. Hi. Okay. I had a question about my Gmail account. So when I have my Gmail connected to my phone, it gives me all of the spam and everything else. But when I have it on my computer, it's all good, and I don't have any of the stuff from YouTube or WeHarded or any of that other jazz. But I want to know how I make so that it doesn't do that on my phone.
What kind of phone do you have?
I have an Android.
Are you using the Gmail client? Like, are you using built-in Gmail on your phone?
I think so. I'm not sure. I got it. I think I downloaded it from the App Store.
Well, there's a Gmail client you can download from the App Store, but also the Android phone allows you to configure your Gmail account right into the phone. I'm sorry you were breaking up a little bit. What seems to be the issue that you're having?
When I open my Gmail account on my phone, it's synced together. But what it gives me is it gives me the spam email, so it gives me YouTube and WeHarded and all this other junk that I don't really want on this phone because I just want this to be a phone that has all the important stuff.
So you're getting email you're getting email that would normally go to your spam folder?
Yes, yes.
What version of Android are you running?
What program are you using to check your mail on your computer?
Google Chrome or Mozilla.
Just the regular Gmail web interface.
I'm surprised the spam is showing up in your phone.
Unless it's an old version of Android and it doesn't have like the new tabs.
Yeah, that's what I get on this phone.
Is it an old Android
phone from Walmart, but.
So it will only show you a unified inbox. It shows you everything.
It might not be the newest version.
Yes, that's exactly what it does.
Okay. Oh, you probably need to upgrade your phone.
Oh, really? There's nothing that can fix it?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. And also, you were talking about Lost earlier. That ended in 2010. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
We know we were joking.
We were kidding. All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck. Bye-bye.
You should watch Grey's Anatomy.
It never really ended in my mind.
No, that's a good one.
We're still on the island.
Good night.
House. How about some House?
I'm still waiting for Welcome Back, Kyle.
I'm waiting to see if they're going to rescue Gilligan's Island.
Hey, I'm waiting for V to finish up their series.
Bye, Francis.
All right, got to go. Bye-bye. All right.
Lost is over in 2010.
Well, not really, because we're still talking about it. We haven't figured it out.
Is it all a dream?
Merrily. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling in.
Gilligan wakes up under a coconut tree.
Back on the island. Oh. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse. Who shot JR?
See you next week. Find out.
Theater Suburbia is proud to present Olive in the Bitter Herbs, a colorful sweet and sour dish laced with laughter by Charles Bush. This Houston premiere features Lee Raymond in the role of Olive Fisher, an elderly character actress and classic New York curmudgeon. Olive is at war with the world, and in particular, her gay next-door neighbors. She is visited by a spectral male figure in her mirror, and a series of strange and outrageous coincidences are revealed.
This production, directed by Suzanne King, opens on April 11th and runs through May 10th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8:30 p.m., and Sundays, April 27th and May 4th at 3 p.m. Theater Suburbia is located at 4106 Way Out West Drive in Houston. You can visit theatersuburbia.org for more information. KPFT, Houston. Start your afternoon drive home weekdays at 3 with some of the city's best local programming. On Mondays, Growing Up in America covers education, public policy, and families in Houston, in Texas, and beyond. On Tuesdays, Ecology brings you up to date on what's happening regionally in the areas of green living, sustainability, and the environment. On Wednesdays at 3, Connect the Dots link you up with local activism and analysis. On Thursdays, Thresholds covers a diversity of topics for the Gulf Coast and beyond. And Fridays, Partisan Gridlock catches you up on the latest from Austin, Washington, and around the world. Those programs air at 3 p.m. weekdays on KPFT Houston. View our full schedule at kpft.org.